originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, back together again and taking the show back on the road. But before we tell you about that, we want to welcome everybody who is tuned in on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201 and everyone streaming us worldwide on our website. You're doing that on your computer or your mobile device, and you're doing it at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you with us for another brand new edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. And JT, the last time that you and I sat in a tack room at a barn to do a Trainer Talk show was with Shug McGahey at Saratoga earlier this year. It was a memorable visit, and I'm sure we'll be replaying that program many times over the next couple of months, no doubt, because people just absolutely loved it. Looking forward to being back on the road here and now in a tack room at Keeneland and the tack room of young Ben Colebrook.
Yeah, it's always great to do them from the barn. It has a certain feel to it that you don't get when you do it in studio. And we did Saffy Joseph at his barn in Florida and Shug at his barn in Saratoga. And then we got Ben over here. It's a great spot. And what a beautiful barn you have over here on Rice Road.
Yeah, it's spectacular, Ben. And thanks for having us out here. And, you know, it's interesting. I went back and looked. The last time that you joined us on Trainer Talk was in December of 2014. A lot has changed since that point, my friend. At that time, you had only saddled 23 winners. And I say only because your total today stands at 172 winners. You now have runners that have earned more than $8.3 million in purses. And that includes Nick's Go, who, by the way, gave you your first Grade 1 victory at Keeneland here a couple of weeks ago, taking the 30. So congratulations. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Just yesterday.
Yeah, I could see the smile on your face as I was kind of running through that. When you hear those words, Ben Colebrook, Grade 1 winning trainer, those words are going to stick with you for life now, man. What's that mean?
It means a lot, for sure. Just, you know, we've kind of been competitive in a few of them, and to get one, you know, get a win in one was major, especially to have it here at Keeneland, which is, you know, so special to me and to so many other people as well.
Did you know that you had it all along coming up to the race?
No, I can't say that. I won't tell you too many lies today.
I say that because the horse, by the way, Nick's Go, was 70-1, the longest price winner in the history of the race.
Yeah, and I don't think he should have been that big of a price, but, you know, I kind of didn't think he was going to run awful. I didn't think he'd embarrass us. I thought, you know, he'd be, if he ran his race or if he improved, he could be, you know, on the board. And, you know, down the backside when they were kind of just, he got loose and I could see Alvin just was cruise control. I was like, you know, he's going to run good today. I mean, how good is, you know, I knew he was going to run a lifetime best anyway. So, but then he kind of just kept right on going and just kind of blew the race wide open. So I would definitely say that was a bit of a shock to the ease of which he did it.
Yeah, that was a good field, too. It wasn't a bunch of slugs that you beat. You had a lot of nice horses there, horses that are hopeful still for the Breeders' Cup. And I was looking at the early PPs for the juvenile this morning, and your horse is among the fastest speed figure-wise in the race. So a lot of blue sky for this horse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've always thought that when the races started to stretch out, he was going to, you know, that's when we'd really kind of see what he really was. You know, he broke his maiden very impressively from the one hole at Ellis going five. And, you know, he kind of alluded that he could be a nice horse. And then it just kind of got off track a little bit, just not, you know, kind of having to come a little bit on short rest and running at Saratoga just to try to, you know, get throw our hat in the ring there. And then, you know, it made sense to try him at Arlington because the timing of the race was very good, and we were ultimately always kind of pointing at this race, you know, and then we didn't handle the poly there. So we just said, you know what, let's just still run him in the race we were planning on.
Is that your philosophy in general to, like, look at the stakes book and work your way backwards with a young horse?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I think that I'm here because he's based here and he trains here, and I just think that horses run better where they're based, and you just lead them over out of their stall. They're always going to give you, you know, their best effort. Is if that's good enough, you know, that's the question. But I do think that they, you know, they're creatures of habit, so the less you have to change their day-to-day, you know, that you're going to get the best effort out of them. So that kind of played into it, the timing. And then, you know, he just had to go up to Arlington. It's an easy ship. If he didn't run well, you know, on the poly, that's not a, you know, you just kind of don't go back to the poly. So, you know, there's no risk, no gain there. So, and, you know, he really showed up, and the rest is history.
Ben, we were together, you, myself, and Jude were together a couple of days before that big win. We were down at Tony's of Lexington, which is, by the way, a tremendous steakhouse here in Lexington, Kentucky. We were there for a Grayson Jockey Club research benefit, and you were at the table in front of everybody talking about what it would mean to win your first grade one, to do it at Keeneland. You're a Kentucky guy. You grew up just minutes from Keeneland here in central Kentucky. Was it everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was that and more. I think I was talking about it with another horse, though, with Into Trouble and the Alcibiades. So that's what I was kind of envisioning it. If it was going to happen, it was going to be her. But, you know, as horse racing goes, she didn't pick her feet up that day, and we still don't really know why. She's come out of the race really well. The only thing with her is her whole – so it rained really hard, and the barn area on Rice Road flooded the night before the Alcibiades. So, you know, she's a filly that when I come back and look at her at night, she's always laying down and sleeping. And I just think that might have kind of thrown her whole, because she just never seemed involved before the race, in the race. You know, she just kind of, even the post-braid, she just kind of looked like she was just kind of going through the motions. So I still think she's going to be a very good filly down the road. So we'll just regroup and find something else for her. But yeah, the thinking, dreaming, grade one dreaming was not probably going on with Nick's go. It was more her, because I thought, you know, I thought she was undefeated at that point, had won both her starts. And I mean, obviously I knew Kenny's filly was gonna take a world of beating, but you know, if maybe she stubbed her toes, I thought maybe we could be there. But didn't work out. So then the other horse surprised me.
It's always funny, too, because trainers take a lot of flack sometimes. Like, if you run two in a race and the longer shot wins, and, you know, everybody thinks there's skullduggery going on and all this jazz. And you know, I mean, we're just like everybody else. I mean, we might know a little something more than the average person when we send a horse over. But you don't know how they're going to run. You can have a horse train like a freak and run terrible. You can have one that just plugs along, and you just think maybe we need to find easier spot, and then they go right to the winner's circle, and you just shake your head. You know, and your horse was kind of like in the middle. You're right; he shouldn't have been 72-1, but you know, I mean, he didn't like jump off the page at you either. You had to be creative if you were going to, you know, use him in your bets or whatever, but he certainly performed to a very high level that day, and looks like he's going to continue on. So, you know, I think sometimes trainers get a bad rap for that. But and then some people say, well, why would he run a horse that was 70-1? Well, that's why, because you don't know for sure.
And, you know, I've had Wayne Lucas and Nick Zito both tell me that. They said, why do you think that we've won so many of these big races over the years? Because we run in them. Right?
Right.
And Wayne Lucas, notorious for pulling a rabbit out of a hat like that, but it's because he's there. You're in it. You have a shot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, especially with younger horses, you really don't know. You know what I mean? So the ones that have been, you know, just because they ran off the TV screen at Saratoga, and, you know, you bring them back in their next start, and they might not run as good, and a lot of them are stretching out. So that separates the men from the boys, so to speak, is as you start to stretch young horses out, who really wants to go that far and who's just probably a brilliant one-turn horse that, you know, probably isn't going to be the, you know, the classic type horse as a three-year-old.
Think about the weekend that you had, that opening weekend. You come here on Friday, right, and you feel like you're loaded for bear. You've got the undefeated filly in the Alcibiades. You come back with Limousine Liberal, who was, what, 5-2 in the Grade 2 Phoenix Stakes on that same program. He ends up finishing third after a bit of a rough trip that day. And then you come back on Saturday. To put it mildly. You come back on Saturday with a 70-1 shot, and you win the Grade 1. Does it make any sense?
Not really, because what Jude's point was is people asking trainers about their horses. On Friday, I had four runners, and I thought all of them were very live, especially the maiden in the first race that had actually just run. He had run second in a stake at Kentucky Downs, and he probably doesn't get the best of trips, finishes fourth, and, you know, Into Trouble didn't show up. Limo has a troubled trip. The other horse didn't really handle the soft turf. So, you know, I had a few texts that morning, got four in, what do you think? And, you know, I was, can win them all. You know, I was telling them, bet early and often. We're strong today. And I was getting some not good text messages after the race. Then the next day, the horse wins, and they're all, you know, they're even madder because I told them to bet on Friday, and Saturday, they're no bankroll. So
all I needed to do was bet a couple bucks, and they could have gotten even.
Exactly. And these are, like, just buddies of mine that I went to high school with and stuff that text me from time to time about, you know, if they're out the races or something. Not big players by any means.
It just goes to show you never know. This is a game that is – there's so much uncertainty, right? You can go on and do your job and have the horse prepared to the. They come out of the gate and it's out of your hands. That has to be a little bit challenging for you, right? That mental aspect of, hey, I did my job and now we just had some bad luck. Is that difficult sometimes?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you know, I think probably a lot of trainers are control freaks, you know, because of, you know, just trying to keep the details and the. Everything, you know, it's so important to keep them in a routine and just to kind of have everything go the right way. So you're trying to control all the variables. And then, like you said, you put them in the most chaotic situation that you probably could ever find a horse race and think that things are going to always go to plan, you know. And that's probably part of the reason why I don't give a whole lot of jocks instructions usually. I kind of just say, you know, where do you think we kind of just discuss it and go from there. But I think if you're trying to, I mean, if you got a speed horse, obviously you want them up front, you know, but I think, you know, trying to the plan B and C probably come into consideration more than plan A a lot of times in a horse race.
Well, you know what that's like because you rode races, and does that give you a little bit more mellow? Or are you
I think
more...
you're giving me a little too much credit riding races. Well, they were kind of, I don't know if you'd call it, they were like exercise riders bouncing around each other. I guess you'd call it races.
Well, I mean,
amateur riding.
Yeah, you have a better understanding of it than I do, for instance.
No, for sure. You know, galloping horses, for sure, is it, you know, being on their backs and just knowing how unpredictable they are. Even just galloping them, much less, you know, having them in a race and, you know, the reacts, you know, the amount of time you have to react to change it is very short. If you don't, that was kind of, you know, back to Jose's ride on Lima. I mean, it looked terrible when you watch it, but he just kept trying to, he was like a half second or a split second late every time, you know, he kind of tried to go here, they blocked him there, you know, and it just, things don't go to plan. And it is what it is, but you just kind of hope that you regroup and you get him the next time.
He ran unbelievably well. I mean, all things considered, because he had zero luck. I mean, just incredible performance to finish third, you know? And that's kind of disconcerting for any trainer when you have a horse that you know could have won the race with just a little ounce of luck, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, to only get... beat a half length after all that was, you know, and both the horses that finished ahead of him, you know, both had beautiful trips. So, you know, it's just one of those things that when there's a race like that, there's three horses that are probably very, very close to each other. It's probably the minute details is what caused those guys to win. And, you know, I mean, if we probably ran that race 10 times, you'd probably have 10 different results, you know, so. Just goes to show you how hard it is in those big races with major horses like, you know, like those three that, you know, the try was pretty easy to figure out in that race.
Yeah, and it goes to show you that you can find trouble even in a short field, right? A lot of people will say you can't, but yeah, sure you can.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, back to that, yeah, it, the reason why there was a lot of trouble is because all three horses had a lot of horse and were able to kind of, you know, they were keeping Jose from where he wanted to be as well, too. It was good race riding by some other jockeys as well, too. I mean, Louis kind of, I don't know if he baited him down to the rail, but he definitely kind of came off the rail. And was it conscious? I don't know. But, it kind of gave him a think that he could get up the rail. And then he's like, if I get in there, and then Louis was going to shut him off. So he goes back out, and Santana already had that hole kind of closing as he was trying to do it. So, you know, it was just tactical things that happened, and they were in a better position to do it. You know, positions everything in a small sprint like that. You know, short field, it's all just where you are at the right time.
Talking with trainer Ben Colebrook here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We are set up in his tack room, his office, here at the barn, and barn 66 at Keeneland over on Rice Road, and that is where he will be preparing his horses for the Breeders' Cup in early November at Churchill Downs. Gosh, what are we, 2 weeks away from the Breeders' Cup? Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, it's getting close, getting close.
How are your nerves holding up?
I don't really get too nervous. It's just kind of, it's exciting. I get more probably excited, you know, just the kind of, it's easier to get up in the morning than maybe when you're got, you know, looking at barn for a horse in December.
So will you, over the next couple of weeks, are all three of the horses we've talked about, the filly from the Alcibiades, Limousine Liberal, and Nixco, all three going to the Breeders' Cup, or are you still trying to make that decision?
The two will. Into Trouble will not.
Into Trouble, that's her name.
Yeah, Into Trouble will go maybe in the Rags to Riches. I mean, she has not worked back since the race, so we'll work her back and we'll come up with a plan. She's won two races, so she's not really, you know, you only have really stakes at this point for her, so we'll figure out where we want to go with her. I will have Mr. Crow in the sprint as well, most likely.
Okay. How much of that decision-making process is on your shoulders, and how much do you rely on the owner's input? How does that work with horse
very
racing?
Well, certain owners, you know, give you more leeway. Certain ones want to be more involved, and I prefer the ones that want to be a little bit more involved in the when you're getting ready for a stake, I think they're the ones putting their money up. I would very rarely push an owner to run in a stake if they didn't want to. You know what I mean? So from that point of view, I don't want to say that, you know, I mean, for the bigger races, I think it's important to sit down. And, I mean, Mike and KK, who own Limousine Liberal, both trained for years, so their input is very valuable. And we kind of, it's a good thing it's a you know, there's three of us, so we all get a vote, and there's never a tie. So that's always good. But right now, everybody seems to be thinking right around. I mean, you know, Limo belongs in the Breeders' Cup, so it's not anyone a win and you're in. So it's he looks like he fits in the sprint, but we will probably cross-enter the mile just because we don't know who, you know, till the last possible minute. I'd like to keep him eligible for every race. You know, something happens in the mile, and it could open things up, so we'll just sit back and, you know, pre-enter both races.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Charlie Whittingham, and he always told me that the better the horse, the more the owner wanted input, which is usually true. Somebody's got a $5,000 claimer that runs at Turfway Park, as you mentioned, in December. They're going to trust you to run the horse for Maiden 5, right?
Right.
But when you get in these grade ones, everybody wants to, you know, have their say and who's riding and all that stuff. So it's a delicate balance sometimes, and you seem to handle it. I've known you now for 17 years, and you've always had that great attitude of, you know, whatever comes, you handle it, and you don't worry too much about anything. You know, when you said you don't feel the stress, I think you're one of the most stress-free people. You and my son are probably the two most stress-free people that I know.
Well, I mean,
that's here in public. What's it like when you get back home, though?
There is stress for sure. But no, I mean, it's just there's only so much you can do and change. You know, the rest of it, you can worry about it, but you're not going to be able to change it. So I worry more about the things that I can control and the things that I can't, you know.
Do you ever beat yourself up about a horse?
Yeah, for sure. There's been, you know, you make mistakes, but I don't really beat myself. I mean, you know, a jock's agent told me one time, he said, I don't even have a rear view mirror in my truck. He said, as soon as I buy a new truck, I rip the rear view mirror out. So I've kind of always thought about that. You know, you live through the windshield, not the rear view. But yeah, certainly you learn from things. And definitely in their training, you know, what works and what doesn't is key, I think. Racing, you know, I mean, like you said, it's such a big variable. But I think in training is where I probably have realized I've made mistakes and have tried to kind of adjust and change things. But, you know, you pick the wrong spot for a horse. I mean, it's, you know, you don't really have that many options. You know, you're going to kind of just see what race makes the most sense and try them. I guess surfaces and stuff like that. And, you know, when races come off the grass, those decisions are always tough, what you do. But I think the biggest thing is just trying to put the horse first and, you know, the horse's well-being and, you know, just put that first and everything else will kind of just, you know, fall into place.
Let's spin that question the other way, Ben. Your greatest training feat or that one moment where you said, yeah, I did everything right here. What would that moment be?
Probably last, and that was a little bit of luck too because the owners were willing to do it. But we ran a filly back last year in 5 days and she broke her maiden for – we put her back in for non-2 and she was claimed. That was probably pretty good in 5 days to win 2 races and get claimed in 5 days. I thought was, but you know, the owners came after we ran and they're at the barn and I just kind of, we jokingly talked about it. I said, you know, there's the race 4 enters today. She won the day before. We kind of all 3 looked at each other. Like, let's just put her in there. You know, what's the worst that can happen? You know, we can always scratch if she looks like she's tired from this race. And she did. She did better after the race than she did before. She was always a real tough filly to train. And after running, she kind of just relaxed and you didn't have to train her. You know, we just jogged her into the race. I think she jogged 2 days and ran and she came back and so that, to win 2 races in 5 days was probably, we were probably doing everything right there, I guess.
You haven't been at this very long. You've only been training on your own for what, about 5? Imagine when you first started out that you'd be sitting here 5 years after getting started and heading to the Breeders' Cup with multiple horses?
No, you don't really think. You know, I mean, my kind of thinking is you just try to stay in business, you know, try to keep making payroll. And, you know, if you win races, you know, that's going to help, obviously, to keep it all going. But I just always took it really kind of day by day and, you know, don't really... You know, you don't expect to win big races. You just hope they come, and if they do, great. But, you know, just kind of keep plugging along, I guess.
Yeah, it's always hard to get horses, and then sometimes the horses you get aren't that great when you're first starting out. And you really, I mean, you've really developed some horses yourself that maybe, you know, weren't good enough to go to a – you know, famous trainer's barn or whatever, and you get the second string, sometimes you get the seventh string, you know, and you've excelled with pretty much all of them. What's the key? Is it the personal touch? Is the fact that you're around them all the time and you know, can go one-on-one with them?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I was very fortunate starting out that, you know, I worked for a good trainer and, you know, very well respected guy and Christoph Clement, who helped me immensely starting out. And, you know, like you would say, if it wasn't good enough for New York, he would say, hey, well, you know, this horse isn't good enough for New York, leave it with Ben, he can Turfway, or he can run it at Ellis, or, you know. And there was a lot of that crossover clientele that, you know, that were, they weren't working for him, but, you know, on the major circuit. So, you know, and that certainly helped. And just a lot of really good, loyal clients. The ball has been with me since the beginning. And a lot of just the contacts that I met while I worked for Christoph, there's kind of been a lot of people that, you know, just... And I think being based at Keeneland really helps because there's only so many stalls down here on Rice Road. So, you know, and I think everybody wants to be... If you want to have a horse in Central Kentucky, there's no better place to be than here. So there's probably... I mean, that probably helps all of us, not just me. You know, anybody who's able, lucky enough to get a barn down here, I think that, I mean, the track at Keeneland's great. The facilities are top notch, and it's we're all just lucky to be here.
Ben, you did an interview with the TDN not too long ago, and you were quoted as saying that you have to have a same time. You don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. How do you do that?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think with a good horse, you know, it's obvious. I mean, Limo, where he's getting older now and he runs in almost the same races every year, it's a lot easier to have a plan with him because we've seen what's worked, you know. But I think with a younger horse, you know, where you're kind of just each race is new territory, it's probably a little harder to kind of know what really is going to work for that horse. So I think just treating them all as individuals and kind of just trying to base out their next couple of weeks and hoping, you know, and then from what happens in those next couple of weeks, like branching off where you're going to go after, you know, say that race was successful, then it's, you know, you're looking at these races, but if it wasn't, you're, you know, you're back to the drawing board, so to speak.
Yeah. It seems like, with the young horses, you're always optimistic, but there's always something in your head that says, well, you know, maybe he can't go that far, or, you know, maybe we need to change her running style or whatever. And so it's a give and take kind of thing. But I think one of the beauties of having you as a trainer is that you're in tune with the horses and you pay attention to that stuff. And if you're in a barn that has 300 head of horses, and you can't possibly be as in tune as somebody like you. You mentioned coming back here at night, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you certainly don't see a lot of trainers coming back at night and checking on their horses. It seems to me, though, that like a lot of you younger trainers seem to do that more than the older trainers. You know, Laz Barrera's line was, you know, I'm a horse trainer, not a night watchman.
Right.
So it seems like a change in attitude, maybe.
Well, I just think, you know, sometimes it's nice to look at them when it's quiet and there's nobody else around, you know, kind of because they're, you know, they're, when there's a lot of activity, they're kind of paying attention to everything. But if you're just kind of looking at them in the stall by yourself, you might pick up on something that, you know, maybe they're pointing here, or they're doing something, or, you know, they're not in the tub. I mean, they'll finish their feed by, you know, the next morning, so you think they've eaten, but you know, they might have just kind of pick all night at it, where, you know, the ones that are really probably doing good have, you know, finished by, you know, 7:30, or, you know, they're done. And, you know, it's just nice to be in a barn when it's just quiet and there's nobody bothering you. So there's a lot to be said for that.
You leave your cell phone in the truck when you come back to the barn?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I think the thing, like you were saying about the bit, I think there's a lot of big barns that do it really. I got to a point where I was getting too many horses, I think, for me. I think everybody's probably got their comfort level, but I think about 40 is about perfect for me. And, you know, 50 in May when the two-year-olds start to win, I'll get up to 50. But, you know, I kind of got to a point where I had 75 horses, and I was in three different places. And, you know, you're spending most of your time driving in between the three places, and you're not spending any time. You're kind of just putting out fires, you know, trying to get around and watch them breeze. And just a lot to be said for having them all under one, either one roof or one, you know, everything I have right now is at Keeneland. So I don't have I have another barn. I have 25 here and 15 on the hill, but they all meet in the paddock and I can see each horse and they can all train in front of you where, you know, when you're split, it's just harder. But those guys, you know, that I think you can do it, but you have to have a huge payroll. And that's another thing that you get your payroll starts to get out of hand and you kind of, few little mistakes and you can be in big trouble in a short amount of time. You know, you start to lose horses or don't win races, and you know, things can change on a dime. So I prefer to keep it smaller and try to just be, you know, pay attention to every little detail that you can, I guess.
Well, everything Ben Colebrook has is at Keeneland, all of his horses. He also has Keeneland with him on this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Second half of the show is next.
On
November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Phasic Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Phasic Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at phasicnovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Hello, this is Stuart Morris. I've spent the last 30 years of my life in the thoroughbred industry. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by great mentors and great clientele base and phenomenal horses as I've come up. I started out with my father at Highclere and was fortunate to raise Silver Bullet Day. I sold the likes of Captain Steve and Silver Bullet Day. 3 years ago, I started my own consignment and have been very fortunate to have a lot of success in a short amount of time due to the great clientele base I have and the good folks that send me really quality horses that are raised the right way and get into good hands for us. We hang our shingle at most every sale east of the Mississippi River, and we hope to see you somewhere to buy your next stakehorse at the Stuart Morris consignment.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Past the quarter pole, signal man fourth, Sambaye is fifth, gap of five back to Baracho and Standard Deviation, who's still seventh. They turn for home. Nix Go leading Derby Date by five lengths off the turn. Signal man third toward the inside. Sambaye is fourth on the outside. Standard Deviation fifth down the center of the track, but well behind Nix Go. And Nix Go at 70-1. Alvin Jimenez. Nix Go, tremendous upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity, 1 minute 44.23 seconds.
Kurt Becker bringing them home in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. That was on opening weekend, Fall Stars weekend of the Keeneland October meet. And Ben Colebrook, the trainer of Nix Go, is our special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, don't forget, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, the podcast of this program and all of our shows available for you to listen to at your leisure, Horse Racing Radio and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, we are visiting with Ben in his barn, Barn 66 here at Keeneland, and been a little trip down memory lane. We started the program talking about that huge upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. We talked also in the first half of the show about some of the other horses that you ran over that opening weekend, including the likes of Limousine Liberal, who was the third at odds of 5-2, much more highly regarded than Nix Go. Curious, which replay have you gone back to watch more? The one where Limousine Liberal got in trouble or Nix Go?
Definitely Nix Go. I did make myself watch the limos replay a couple times, but that was it. I don't think I'll be watching that anymore.
back to the rearview mirror start.
Yeah, exactly. So, that goes in the...
So, you know, they have races like the Matchmaker, right, where you win and you get a Season 2 a Stallion or whatever. You're sporting your Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. Do you get a Claiborne horse now from the Breeders' Futurity?
I mean, I have horses for Claiborne, but I don't know if I'll get any more or not. But, it's great just to even have horses for them. So that was cool. That was another real neat part of it all was that, you know, Walker's, you know, the one to hand you the trophy. That was pretty neat because, you know, he and I, we do a lot, and he's a really great young guy and a, you know, pillar of the industry. So it's, that was really, really the, you know, kind of the cherry on top, I guess.
As we've been sitting here doing this interview, your phone has been going nonstop with text messages. I'm curious what it was like after the race. How many texts did you receive, and what are some of the messages that you remember?
There's a lot. I don't even know how many. I didn't even count it. I just tried to kind of answer as many, tried to keep up with it as much as I could that day, trying to get back to, you know, answering a bunch of them. But I think it took me till Sunday to get them all answered. But there was a lot. I don't even know how many there were. But there's, you know, just kind of was going, my pockets just, you know, just kept going off as soon as he crossed the wire, which is, you know, that's kind of the cool thing is about the, a lot of them are from fellow trainers too, you know, so that's always neat when you, because a lot of us, you know, we work and compete against each other, but we're also, you know, kind of root for each other when you're not not competing against them. So yeah, I think Wesley, he even called me. So he was like the first one to actually call me, I think.
Didn't you tell me Kenny McPeak has been known to text you right away or come up and,
yeah,
and say congratulations
when, yeah,
you win a big race?
Yeah, I won race at here, and he called up and got him to announce it over the loudspeaker because I don't know if they really realized that it was the first win of my career. So that was nice of him to do that. And we kind of, I mean, I'll send him a congratulatory text when he wins a grade one or something. I don't bother, you know, if he wins a allowance race on Thursday. But, you know, the grade ones are obviously so important, and they're the reason why everybody gets involved in this industry. And, you know, to win one is a dream come true. So it was very amazing experience all around.
I was out here the Monday after the great weekend, and you had tons of people coming up to you and congratulating you. It was really cool to see, you know, owners, trainers, jock agents. I mean, you know, I think everybody in our sport knows how hard it is to win a grade one. And when somebody does it, especially somebody like you that's, you know, starting out and you're a good guy and people like to see the good guys win, you know, that's a feather in your cap.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important, is just kind of treat everybody, you know, the way you'd want to be treated in this game. And I think, you know, we're all competitors, but at the same time, you know, we all know how difficult of a life it is. And I think we're all, you know, kind of cheering for each other. I think probably a lot of people, you know, there's maybe a few bad apples that are resentful and stuff, but I doubt there's not that many. Everybody's pretty good about each other. You know, we're all back here together, and it's, you know, the industry as a whole is bigger than any one of us. So I think that's the main thing too, is everybody realizes how, like you said, how tough these races are. So when, no matter who you are, if, you know, you give them respect when they do win one.
Are you a big New York Knicks fan now?
No, it doesn't even have anything to do with the Knicks, I
really
guess. No, it's the Korean, the genetic profiling thing they use is called Knicks, and then K, they put K in front of a lot of their names. You know, there was K-Wave and K-Star and K-Choice, so it's K-Knicks. Go. So the basketball team, they're not fans of the New York Knicks. Or maybe they are, but that's the explanation I got. Was
so is the actual name of the horse Knicks Go, or should it be
Knicks Go? Yeah, they didn't punctuate it like that, so it's Knicks Go. But they've not told me to say it any different. But and Randy Moss actually asked me that before the race. That was the only call I got from them. They just want to know why his name was, if they were New York Knicks fan.
That's so great. Ben Colebrook with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. There's a saying that says that you never work with family. Your dad, longtime horseman, farm manager, longtime trainer, John Colebrook. You work with family now. What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, we don't work together on a day-to-day basis anymore, but we have, you know, we have own a couple horses together, and it's been good. Yeah, we've been very lucky with them. We raced her, she won a stake, and now she's a broodmare. She's got a yearling that will race, and then she's got a weanling that will sell in November by Distorted Humor. So and she's back in foal to Spitestown. So, no, that it's been good. Just, you know, there's always decisions to be made and, you know, stuff like that that you might not kind of have to discuss. But no, they've been good. They're probably my biggest fans. They're always there when on the big days.
What did Dad say after your grade one win?
He just was kind of, he was not speechless because he's never speechless, but he was talking, but you know, just kind of, you know, didn't really just kind of, I mean, like, it was just kind of surreal. You're kind of not really even, just kind of like floating through, like, is this really happening kind of thing, you know?
You were like that because yeah. I talked to you about that. You know, I'm one of the biggest members of the Ben Colebrook Chowder and Marching Society, as Vin Scully would say. But you know, I told everybody how great you were and whatever. And then you did that interview and your eyes were like glazed over and you were talking, but yeah. You were just like on cloud nine, sure. Somewhere else, yeah. You know. And I said to the people I was with, don't let that interview, you know, affect how you feel about Ben. Right. That's not really Ben right there. That's Ben, you know, in a very high place right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was great. It was great to watch and you know, since I've known you so long, I kind of know how you are, and I just thought, wow, he's so excited. That's so cool, you know, because there's nothing like that. I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah, for sure. It's just raw emotion when you're at that point. You don't even know what the question. I remember him asking me something about how'd you get him to from 5 furlongs to 1 mile and 16. Like, I think I was just lucky that we. I don't even know right now.
Hey, maybe you should go back and watch the interview.
Yeah, no.
The heck with the replay.
No, I won't go back and watch
it. It was great. It was a good. It was a good interview, but it was it wasn't like your typical conversation. Like if somebody listened to you on this show and then saw that interview, they'd go, "What the hell was he drinking that day?" You know, it was crazy. It was so good. It was just an amazing day.
You know what? One of the neat things about sitting here in Ben's office at the barn doing this program is that when you look out, you have all the horses down the shed row, and there's a horse, a chestnut, with a white patch on his forehead that keeps sticking his head out and looking in here. So we know we at least have one listener to this program today. Yeah. Who is that guy?
That's the Blaze Faces Fancy Dress Party.
All right,
and she actually worked this morning, so that's. It's good. She's got her head out and seems happy. And
yeah, she's upset we haven't said anything nice about her yet.
She's looking down here now. So she's got a pretty face. You can't miss her.
Yeah, she's absolutely beautiful. Ben Colebrook here, Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Ben, we mentioned that you haven't been at this very long. 5 years is a very short time frame, and especially to be where you are in the sport and, you know, pointing toward the Breeders' Cup with multiple horses now. What are some of the biggest lessons that you've had to learn that have benefited you most over the past 5 years?
Well, that's kind of a tough one. I think I learned a lot. You know, I've been around, you know, I haven't been a trainer very long, but I've been around the sport my whole life. You know, I don't remember not being around horses ever. I mean, you know, my first memories, you know, were probably horse related really. But I think I learned, you know, I definitely learned a lot working for Christoph, and that was my first job working with, you know, the major league horses at the racetrack. You know, I worked for Bill Harrigan. We, you know, pre-training and breaking, and the horses would go on, but you're totally a step removed from it. I mean, it was great. It was cool to, you know, watch these horses that you saw as yearlings, and they'd come back if they had little injuries or something, and we'd rehab them and get them back. But to be there every day and kind of see the you know, how much work goes in to get those horses, you know, to show up and be their best on the big days, I think I learned a lot, you know, working for Christoph and being around, you know, horses that were running in the Breeders' Cup and, you know, horses that did win Eclipse Championships and, you know, all that. And I think that was a major part of, you know, just seeing how long, you know, how a horse throughout the year, you know, how you kind of bring them to a race and try to have them peaking at the right time, I think is, you know, a big, big part of it. Cause you know, every year you see these horses in the summer and they look like they're, you know, world beaters. And then by the time the Breeders' Cup comes around, they might not be that same horse. So I think a lot of it was, you know, Christoph's very detail oriented and, you know, he really pays attention to every little thing. And I think that, and how hard it is to keep like a horse like Giaponte good for that long, you know, that was a, that was a big learning experience of how, you know, not only was that horse good as a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, you know, I mean, and go to Dubai and, you know, all the stuff that, you know, I was there for that whole, I went to work for Christoph when she was 2 turning 3. So that was a long, you know, exciting time in the barn and, you know, not just him, but I mean, that was my first kind of eye-opening experience of how hard it is to, you know, get these horses to perform at that top level.
Yeah, what's the key to doing that? How do you do it?
It's easy. No. I mean, first of all, it's the horse. It's definitely, you have to have the horse. And then I think the other thing is just reading your horse. I think Bill Mott one time said it made a lot of sense. He said, it's not important on when to train. It's also important when not to train. So, you know, I think that's when to do more, when to do less. You know, giving them breaks, I think, is the key. You know, Gio would always go to pace it and he'd kind of get a break. And I think that was part of the reason why he was able to kind of stay around and be at that top level as long as he did, is he would, there would be a time where he would just be a horse and get to turn out in a, you know, paddock at pace. And that was very important, I think.
It's always been my impression of you that you wanted to be a trainer from a young age. I mean, we worked together like 17 years ago, and you would always ask questions. You were, you know, always trying to get in the horses' heads, and you know. So did you have that feeling then, or did when did it come to you that
it was probably right around that same time. You know, early 20s. You know, I'd say. My teen years, I kind of probably got away, you know, just in high school. And I mean, I still galloped horses, and it was a way to make money that I could have spending money to go out and hang out with my friends. But, you know, then you get to your 20s, and you're starting to think, like, you know, I can go to college, I can get a job working in an office, or I can, you know, go to the, you know, ride horses and be on the racetrack and be outside and, you know, be around all these, you know, beautiful animals. And it kind of got me there, you know, because there was, I mean, I knew was because my family was involved in it, and it's, you know, it's not, most days aren't like last Saturday, you know. So I did know that, you know, you're kind of, it's going to be beating your head up against the wall a lot of days, but it was just something that, you know, it gets in your, it's an addiction, I think, more than anything else. It kind of gets in your blood, and you can't kick it even if you wanted to, so you might as well accept it and just try to do the best you can at it, because you're not going to kick the habit.
You know, you bring up a great point. You said that not all days are going to be like last Saturday when you win a grade one, right? You're going to have more days than not that are those grinded out days where you're showing up. You might even hit a slump where you don't win races for a certain period. What's the key to maintaining a positive attitude and keeping with the program through those kind of times?
Well, I think I'm just kind of geared for it because I have been around it so long. I just kind of keep your, you know, just, I mean, the good days are great. So obviously you gotta enjoy those and, you know, store those in the memory bank, and, you know, you're always going to have it. And you can always think back when things aren't going good, be like, man, look how great that was. But I think the biggest thing is just being real kind of even keel and just trying not to get too upset when things don't go, because, you know, it's got a way of breaking your heart too. You know, there's bad things happen, and you just got to move on and hopefully that the, you know, the next day bring something better on the bad days. And you know, at the same time, I mean, it's still pretty neat life that we have. I mean, it's definitely a life. That's what people don't get, you know, is that they thought, oh, you know, you got a great job. Yeah, well, that's seven days a week, 365 days a year. Like, well, you don't go on vacation. Well, yeah, I go on vacation sometimes, but you're still not totally on vacation. Your phone's still ringing at 5 a.m. and, you know, you're having to talk to, you know, your staff and make sure there's not any issues or problems. So you're never totally removed from it. So it is, there is that, but, you know, it's also, you know, that it's the game of highs and lows for sure. But I think the biggest thing is just trying to keep it. It's like a ship, you know, just trying to keep it straight and not turning over, and, you know, just keep yourself as grounded as you can when things go good, don't get too high on yourself and think you got it figured out, because that's when it will. That's when it'll bite you.
Yeah, no kidding. That's for sure. Well, you mentioned taking vacations. Do you get to take a vacation every year or every other year?
My wife is going to start making me more, I think. She's getting a little agitated. But I usually will go. I try to go on a ski trip once a year. Go snow skiing for 4 or 5 days or something. And
wait a minute, where's a kid from Kentucky learn to snow ski?
I just kind of grew up doing it close to, you know, up in Cincinnati, there was a place I learned to ski there. And then I would go out west, you know, college and high school, and spend some time out there. But I kind of picked it up. It's kind of just been a passion, something I like to do. It's kind of, you know, you get out there and you're not thinking about horses, or, you know, you just kind of beautiful mountains and just enjoy the time out there. So I do have that as a hobby when I can get away, but it's few and far between.
Who takes care of the operation if you're going to get
Well, I've got great people. And that's the other thing is the people that you have, you know, I've figured out early on that, you know, you're only as good as your, if you're going to train horses, you've got to have a good team behind you, because you can't do it all. When I first started training, you know, I had a small string and, you know, I was galloping most of myself, and, you know, you had just a couple grooms. It was only probably two grooms, me, a freelance rider, hot walker, and, you know. But as you grow, you have to kind of relinquish some things and, you know, let go and let people take over certain parts of it. Look, it goes on. When I'm not here, it probably runs better. You know, and I think you have to realize that. I think that you pay people. And you treat them as good as you can, and they're the ones that are actually kind of making me look good, you know, because it's not something that you could ever do, you know, by yourself. You have to have a big team, and it's a big, big, big effort from a lot of people show up on, you know, race day.
Talking with trainer Ben Colebrook on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Will you set goals for yourself?
Yes and no. I mean, I wouldn't say like, you know, oh, I'm going to win a, you know, 5 grade 1s in the next 10 years, you know, something crazy like that. No, I just try to, I think when I get a, you know, when you get a horse that can run, you just try to, I don't know that I set a goal with them, but you just try to figure out what can I do to get the best from this horse? And, you know, what can we do to kind of keep him when you do get him doing good? What can you do to keep him at a high level? I mean, I think it's more, I don't know if it's like goal oriented, but you know, you want to have success and you want, you know, I definitely enjoy it when we do win a, you know, when you win a big race, it's amazing, but I don't necessarily like, all right, I got to win 5 graded stakes next year to be happy or whatever. I just think we'll see what the barn has, but you just try to, whatever you have in the barn, you do the best with. Some of the most rewarding wins are like, you know, you win with a horse that you didn't think you could have, and he exceeds your expectations. That's always cool too, you know.
Yeah, those are the ones. It's not necessarily the famous horses that you have to do the best work, because they're usually pretty good. But it's those ones that you get in that two trainers have had before and said can't run, and then you win a race with them. That makes you always feel good, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's just, and you know, it kind of makes you, gives you confidence that you're doing the right thing, and, or, you know, that your approach is having an effect. So I think that's very important.
How long does it take you to find out if a horse can run when you get him in your barn?
It's a lot harder to find out if they can really run than to find out if they can't. So you usually find good at finding out when they can't run at all. You know, I mean, that's pretty easy to spot. Because like we said before, I mean, they can go out there and they can show you everything in the mornings and then disappoint in the afternoons. So, you know, I mean, I think it's just process of elimination of like, all right, you know, he's not. I think you got to get expectation too. So it's a game of hopes and dreams. So you don't want to dash their expectations early either, you know, and tell them, oh, you got a bum. But you also want to kind of, you know, they're spending a lot of money each month to have the horse in training. So we need to kind of, I like to have, you know, when I get a horse within 3 months, we got to kind of have a plan and kind of like, this is what I think your horse is. Are you okay with this you know, can we run him for maiden 30, or can we? And you know, most of my owners are great like that. They're like, you know, yeah, let's give him a chance to be competitive and run him in the right races. And if he surprises us, great. But most of the time, you know, you've got him pegged, you know, at a level, or you know, do we need to go to Indiana, or do we need to stay at Churchill or Keeneland, you know? So there's definitely that.
Have you ever had one surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, there's at some level. I mean, I've never had one that I said is stone cold useless that, you know, was a great stakes winner.
I don't. Darn it.
Yeah, I mean, no. But, you know, I've had ones that, you know, because you can't really measure how much desire they have. That's the one thing you can't, you know, like a horse that just gets in a race and, you know, he, whether it's a 12-5 claimer or something, you know, but he just wants to win that race, you know, he's going to be better than, you know, some horse that's got a lot of ability that just, when it comes time down to really lay on the line what he's got, he just decides to just, you know, kind of, I'm just going to give it 50% effort. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like kids in high school and stuff. The most talented kid on the team is not necessarily the one that, you know, produces the most. He might be the one that, you know, kind of just, you know, he's more worried about, you know, whatever, kind of looking good and being the star, where, you know, some kid on the team that just tussles and just going for every loose ball and doing everything he can, he's going to probably make the difference, you know, and maybe, you know, they might. So I think horses are a lot like that too. You never know who's going to be the, you know, once you get in a race, what they're actually going
to
do.
It's kind of hard to believe, but we're almost out of time. We're coming up toward the end of the show, about 3 minutes left here, Ben. Always like to kind of wrap it up by asking trainers to let us know something about them that people might not know. And you've already talked about your hobbies that you enjoy, at least one of them, with snow skiing and going out west when you get a chance to do it. What else do you enjoy doing?
My wife and I go to the movies a lot, I guess. That's probably...
You have a favorite movie?
Favorite movie? No. I mean, can't write. Nothing jumps off the top of my head, you know? I got a bunch of movies that I like. I don't know if any of them are my favorite.
How'd you celebrate after that big grade one win?
I actually went out to dinner with an owner that was in town to run his horse in the... I spent some time. We went to the director's room and had a glass of champagne, and then we went to the Breeders' Cup party for a little bit. They were having a thing at Keeneland. And then I went to Tony's with an owner. My wife was tired and she went home. So I went and met him downtown and we watched the UK game, and then I came home. So it was pretty late night for me, but it wasn't crazy, but it was fun.
You're a UK grad, you still follow the Cats?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's tougher now because they're, you know, it's every year it's a whole new team. So I usually try to go to one of the games early, you know, one of the, like the, if not the preseason game, like an early game, and kind of just get a program and try to get to know the players. It takes me at least a game or two to kind of get the team. But no, I mean, I still root for UK, but it is different nowadays with the one and dones. It's made it a whole new game.
Yeah, it is different than having the guys year after year and kind of watching them develop. You know, now you watch them develop in the NBA.
Yeah, and I guess I used to watch the NBA a lot. You know, I was a big Michael Jordan as a kid. You know, as probably most kids were my age. But you know, now watching, I do watch more NBA because you got all these Kentucky guys that you're rooting for.
I think so. That is probably cool. Keeps horses around in his barn longer than Calipari keeps players.
Oh, there's Kentucky, no, there's now, no right? question. His horses have careers, not just me.
Ben, just about ready to wrap things up here. That music means we're just about out of time. Really appreciate you having us out here today. Thanks so much for the visit. Congrats on all the success, and let's go get it done at the Breeders' Cup.
Thank you. Let's hope limo and they all show up and be a good day.
All right, Ben Colebrook here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. JT, another really fun visit.
Yeah, it was great. Love doing these in the barn.
Yeah, it's outstanding. Our thanks for our producer, Lee Delapina, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios. For our special guest, Ben Colebrook, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.